Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering Division III sports through interviews with those involved in Division III. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on any other platform, make sure to follow the podcast. Also follow our socials at Not Even D2. We got some great episodes in store. And if you're looking for some sneak peeks into those episodes or just more Division III content, our page is definitely a page you'd want to follow. If you're watching on YouTube, you probably noticed I'm recording the intro today by myself. Neruda is just on the road doing some things, so I got this intro done by myself. No worries on that end. But Ruda and I plan to talk a little WNBA ahead of Elise's episode, so I'll do that by myself before I talk about her. And first, I want to start by saying the WNBA is in like such a great place where the players are playing at an all-time high compared to previous times. The teams are as good as they've ever been. The notoriety is at an all-time high. The respect the WNBA is getting is at an all-time high. So those are all positives before I go on a little rant, maybe on some negative things. And what I want to say is people are expecting me, if I'm talking about the WNBA, to bring up Caitlin Clark or talk about strictly Caitlin Clark. But I'm here to tell you guys, I don't want to talk about Caitlin Clark. And the more we talk about her, the more repetitive it gets, so that when she does historic things like become the first rookie to record a triple-double, it doesn't mean as much or it doesn't get as much attention as it should, because throughout that whole week, all we heard was Caitlin Clark this, Caitlin Clark that. It's getting too repetitive. And I want people to know that Caitlin Clark is not the WNBA. Like, there's ton more positive stories that we could focus on regarding the WNBA. Like, why are we not talking about the former two-time MVP defensive player of the year, Asia Wilson, having one of the most dominant seasons in WNBA history? Why are we not talking about that there's so much talent in the WNBA that they're able to expand next year to add two more teams in Golden State and Toronto? Why are we not talking about that this rookie class that just was drafted, led by Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, is probably the best class in WNBA history already? So there's just tons of storylines and really like great basketball being played that when we only talk about her, it takes away from the basketball. So just keep that in your mind for the new fans joining the WNBA, starting to watch. Like, she is not a top 10 player in the WNBA. She's really good. She deserves a ton of credit for what she's done for the WNBA already in her early career. She's a great basketball player. I think she just had like 30 points last night. So definitely deserves a ton of respect, but to only focus on her is too repetitive. And there's way more going on in the WNBA outside of her. But back to today's episode, we got Elise Knutson, who was a three-time CCIW player of the year, three-time All-American, and is now transferring to a Division I school in Illinois State. She finished her four-year career at Millikan. Just had a wonderful career, which I'm going to talk about. But what I really took away from this episode and talking to Elise is, what, not just in basketball, but in life, but for Elise, basketball, what you put into the game, you're going to get back. And what I mean by this is there was plenty of times where Elise could have, you know, taking a step back and just been like, I deserve this, so my work, I don't need to work anymore. And for example, she broke her high school record at Tolona Unity. And instead of coming to Milliken thinking my spot is guaranteed, I deserve to be starting, I'm the best player on this team, it was like, now I'm at Milliken, I need to kick it into another gear. And that work led her to break Milliken's scoring record. So she's the all-time leading scorer in basketball history at Milliken. And now transitioning into Illinois State, now she knows, like, all right, now my work has to go up another level. So it's just each time that she's gotten an award, it never was her head got too high and she stopped working. And this could be credited to her coaches, to her family, which she talks about. But I just really respect players that they get all these awards and it's still another level that they're trying to reach. And you can always admire something like that. And then the last thing I want to talk about before we get into the conversation with Elise is this season especially, but it just in general, shout out to all the Division III coaches. Ruta mentioned this in a previous episode that they're still doing a great job and not getting the popularity or the salary that most Division I coaches have. And why I'm bringing this up is a lot of coaches at higher levels didn't want to take a chance on Elise coming out of high school. They believe she was too small or whatever the case might have been, but they just didn't want to take a chance on her. And Coach Lett, the head coach at Milliken during her 4 years, took a chance on her early in her career and allowed Elise to be able to play at a higher level. Now she's going to Illinois State, and I think that she's going to have a great year. And when she does have a great year, the credit is going to go to Coach Gillespie, who's her Illinois State coach. And credit to Coach Gillespie for taking a chance on a Division III player. I got a lot of respect for that, too. But it's really Coach Lett is going to be in the shadows because that's in her past. But it's really the groundwork from Coach Lett that is allowing Elise to play on this bigger platform. So I got a lot of respect for Coach Lett, too. And shout out to Coach Lett. I just saw that she took a Division II job, head coaching role at the University of Illinois Springfield. So moving up divisions is always exciting. I know, or I assume that she's going to have a great career coaching there. Elise talked a lot about her in the episode. And just shout out to, like I said, shout out to the Division III coaches, especially this year, because also shout out to Bob Quillman, who posted this screenshot. But 13 players from Division III this past year are moving to play Division I, just basketball. So that says a lot about the talent of Division III and kind of the more eyes that Division III is starting to get now that the level of play is rising and just more people are respecting the division, which is all great things for the division. But we talk about a lot with Elise, you know, what the recruitment process to Milliken was like for her and how that's changed now that she entered the transfer portal and is now at Illinois State, what that recruitment process was like. We talk about the CCIW, which is one of the best women's basketball conferences in the whole Division III country, and like what her mindset is going into Illinois State, a Division I conference, going to be playing against a really good group of teams. So definitely a great episode. We talk about a lot with her. Hope you guys enjoy the episode, and let's hear from Elise. All right, we're here with Elise. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. Excited to speak about everything basketball, basically.
We definitely appreciate you getting on. We're really excited to get this episode going. It's going to be a good one.
So I was just watching my Liberty play, WNBA team. So I'm just wondering, do you watch the WNBA? And if so, like, who are your favorite players or teams?
I do, here and there when I can. It's hard to pick a favorite athlete and a favorite team. You know, there's so much hype around Caitlin Clark, but it's really easy to be a fan of hers because she's grown the game so much in such a short amount of time. Like, I mean, I could say 3 years from now, there's no way that I would have thought that there would be this much attention on women's basketball. And that's just super important to me because it's a sport I love and it's a sport that a lot of people I care about love. So she's obviously like, I'm a fan of hers. I mean, I don't have like a specific team. You know, I love the way Alyssa Thomas plays. Like, she's just a dog. I love Kelsey Plum. I just like the players who are kind of just, you know, because this is the kind of player I am, just keep to myself, like know what I need to do to benefit the team. And I think, you know, the players that I just mentioned, like, I think they do just that. And that's kind of who I follow and like to watch play. So that's kind of my stance on the WNBA realm today.
No Liberty love. I like it. I like it.
Definitely. You got to respect that. But something that I'm kind of curious about. So when we talk to different, you know, Division III players that make that jump to the next level, a funny conversation that is always had is about that first summer workout, you know, when you're, you know, for the first time, because in the Division III world, you know, after the school session's over, you just go back home and you have to work out on your own. So now you're playing Division I at Illinois State and you're going there, staying on campus, you're practicing, getting your own shots up, and you're lifting with a strength coach. So just talk about how that transition has been for you and if you have any funny stories from that.
For sure. I mean, luckily in my case, just from the people that I was surrounded with at Millikan and kind of what that university provided for me at the D3 level kind of made this transition a little bit easier than maybe it may have been for others. And then kind of just my work ethic, like even at Millikan, like I knew exactly what I needed to be. I was always getting extra shots up just because I wanted to be the best of the best in that league and in the country. So that required me to, you know, get in the gym outside. And that was usually by myself just because we don't have the resources. And that's kind of like the biggest thing, like walking into here and like just seeing like the gear we get and like all the assistant coaches. Like I had two coaches like most of the time through my time at Millikan, and like all these resources is like, I'm just like, I'm so grateful for you're able to rebound the ball for me, like what I want. Like that was like the biggest thing. But I mean, luckily, like I said, like Coach Lett pushed me to another level when I was at Millikan. Like she knew what I wanted. She knew what I wanted for the team. And that's why I felt like I could make this jump. But I mean, I think like, I don't have any funny stories yet. We're only two full weeks in. But you know, it's definitely been like the schedule has been a little bit of an adjustment for me just because, you know, I'm not used to being on a set schedule in the summer in terms of basketball. Like that's one small thing. But if we were to talk maybe a month from now or a month from when we started, I may have had maybe an interesting story. But the thing we just did with the Marines was definitely like an experience like none other. Like they really did kind of push us out of our comfort zone. But again, just grateful.
I'm going to take you way back. So I was reading an article that said when you were like 10 years old, you just always wanted a basketball in your hands. And no matter the time, like you would just be outside, neighbors come outside, yell at you like, you got to go inside. I'm trying to go to bed. So I'm curious kind of who were some of the players you were watching at a young age that kind of developed your game? And I noticed that you scored over 1,900 points in high school, averaged just under 25 points a game. So where do you think you kind of developed your like craft of scoring?
Mm-hmm. That's such an interesting question. Cause like growing up, I was a fan favorite of just like any athlete. It wasn't really specified to basketball just because I also loved softball so much at the time. I mean, I guess a funny story is that like fatheads were like a big thing at the time. So like you wanted to have an athlete on your wall and like blown up. So I had like a Kevin Durant themed basketball room. Like anything that I asked for Christmas was like Kevin Durant related when he was at Oklahoma City. So like, yeah, my family like made fun of me. They're like, Elise, this is a little bit much, but he was just somebody that like, I don't know. I would get like the Sports Illustrated Kids. And like, if he was in there, cut it out. Like it was just that kind of thing. But I think like the biggest thing were like people that were closer to my age or like even a couple years older. Like I was fortunate enough to like work out with Anaya Peoples or watch her work out at a young age. And she ended up going to Notre Dame and then transferred to DePaul. But like her dad worked her out at such a high level at that age. And I think seeing that was like, okay, if I want to do what she's doing or have like the opportunity to do that, I'm going to have to work out at that level and, you know, do things like in the driveway at that level. And I don't think a lot of people my age were able to see that, but I mean, I was just surrounded by such great athletes. Like, I mean, I played travel softball with a girl who just graduated from Alabama and finished her her season or her career at the World Series, like just tremendous athletes who have gone on to play different sports at different universities. And I think like the biggest life lesson is like surround yourself with people who, you know, I think you can benefit from. And I did that at a young age. And but yeah, that's such an interesting question, because it's never like one athlete, like professional. I feel like people always answer professionally, but like, I think it's just the people that are close to my age or doing the same things as me. And but yeah.
Elise, honestly, I think KJ didn't say anything, but I think he's really happy that you said Kevin Durant was one of your favorite players growing up. Yeah. He is a big Thunder fan. So definitely, he's definitely happy to hear that. But I also want to talk a little bit about your recruitment, right? So you ended up committing to Millikan, but something I read online that I was talking to KJ about, you broke your scoring record in high school at Tolono. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Tolono Unity. Yep.
Tolono Unity. And you broke the scoring record that was held by a former NBA player, Brian Cardinal, yes. Who played at Purdue, and he played for the Mavericks too in the NBA. But First of all, just talk about your recruitment, and if you're getting recruited by D1s, and if you weren't getting recruited by any D1s, can we please figure out what they were thinking?
Right. Yeah. So honestly, basketball like wasn't on the table for me at all until like the end of my junior year. I like wanted to play softball. People told me that softball was the route I should go just because I was so small, and I didn't play AAU at the time, but Coach Lett didn't really care about that. She's like, AAU doesn't really matter in my eyes. And she was like the only four-year institution that was recruiting me like freshman through senior year. I really thought I wanted to go the junior college route, play 2 years and then be done. But decided to commit to her really late. And she tells just about everybody that I kept her on her toes. But I think I made like, that was the best decision I could ever make, for my collegiate career and just academically and, experience wise. But I think after my sophomore year, there were a lot of coaches that were kind of questioning her, like, where did we miss her in high school? Like a lot of Division II institutions. And I knew for a fact that people wanted me to leave there after my sophomore year. But I knew I made a commitment to coach, and I just loved the team and the people that I was playing with. But I think like the biggest thing that was for me now, when I decided to get into the portal this past, you know, a couple months ago, the recruiting process was so different for me. Like I visited maybe two schools my senior year of high school. Didn't really do the photo shoots, the like official visits, like none of that. And like doing all that was like so unfamiliar territory for me. Like I would look to my mom and I'd be like, am I really about to do this? Like, I don't want to go take pictures in the uniform. Like, I don't even know if I'm going to go here. Like, why do they give us all these snacks? Like, we get to stay in a hotel, like all that kind of stuff. And like, that's just things that like you take for granted. I think some athletes may do that. Like if they already commit to a D1, like they know that this is how it is, like for my 4 years. And like Division III builds character, and it makes you like, you're just grateful for everything that you get and the opportunity to play. Like essentially you're paying to play because you love the sport so much. But I mean, yeah, never would I have thought that I would play 4 years at such a high level of Division III and now play D1. Like, you could never tell Elise her senior year of high school that would be the case. But just grateful. Brian Cardinal was there when I broke the record, which was awesome. I got a picture with him. He's like maybe 2 feet taller than me. played with Dirk Nowitzki. I was like literally like in awe when I looked up at him. I was like, I can't believe you just broke your scoring record. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what that process looked like for me, I think, out of high school. And just, I guess, grateful for the decision that I made. No regrets. So.
For sure. And, you know, first of all, I mean, I love that sentiment that you're talking about with, you know, at Division III, where, you know, we have to basically get it from the ground up and get to where we want to go. And this is a conversation that KJ and I have both personally one-on-one, but also with different guests. So we're right on the same page with you. We see it the same exact way. But to move on to like your college career, you had a great, like you said, you had a really good freshman and sophomore year, but specifically your freshman year, you came in and averaged 18.5 points per game, named D3 hoops.com Central Region Rookie of the Year. So I'm just interested. Obviously, we know that you work really hard in your game, but what do you think made the transition so seamless for you?
I think I kind of got kicked in the butt, like right when I got there, if I'm being honest. You know, Coach Lett, like we do a lot of conditioning tests that are pretty grueling at times. And that was something that I wasn't really prepared for. And like, I don't want to exaggerate kind of the level that she expects us to be at, like physically, mentally. But it's pretty high level for Division III. And that's something that I'm grateful for. But I think my teammates, like they just understood that, no, she recruited you so you can come in here and do what you need to do to help us win games. And they weren't going to shy away from the fact that I wasn't doing things right. And like I can just remember all of these different instances where I wasn't going hard enough. And it was either her on me or one of our captains or even somebody that was only a year older than me. And I think that's what honestly kept me there. Cause like, these people are going to push me at this level. Like, this is exactly what I want. And I knew nothing was going to be handed to me, like coming out of high school, breaking the scoring record. Like, that's just not who I am. Like, I know I was going to have to work for things, but, I think following that freshman year, I was a little bit nervous going into sophomore year, just because we played maybe 13 games my freshman year and all of those were in conference. And when you get out of conference, our non-conference schedule is pretty difficult. Like we're going up to Whitewater most of the time. And then we were going to play in the national tournament. So you're playing, you know, top 25 teams. But again, the CCIW is very competitive. So I think that also prepared me a little bit. But I mean, again, just every day I knew it wasn't going to be given to me. And I knew what I wanted to do. And luckily my sophomore year went to the Sweet 16. So, yeah. And lost to the eventual national champs. But, I mean, just, yeah, I mean, the transition wasn't smooth. I'm trying not to like sugarcoat it, but I also don't explicitly say things that like happened to me, but just knew for a fact that like coach was pushing me every day. Like recruits would come in. Like there is a funny story where we had a recruit come in who actually ended up playing for us. She transferred from a JUCO, watched our practice, and we were doing a transition drill and I was doing it completely wrong. Coach ran from the other end, got in my face screaming at me. And that recruit that I knew, cause I played high school against her and wanted her to kind of check out our university. And she, that practice frightened her and she ended up going the JUCO route, but I got her to come last year. So she's spending her last 2 years at Milliken, but they were like, she was like, if she's on you that hard, I can't imagine what she would do to me. And I'm like, yeah, this is every day. Like it's, she's not going to take it light on me no matter what. I mean, I could score 40 the night before and the next practice is going to be difficult. So, yeah.
You definitely got to respect stuff like that, especially from coaches, right? When like sure. They don't treat the best player differently, right? Or the player that maybe scores the most, like you got to run the same amount of sprints as this person that's playing 0 minutes a game, or you got to run this drill just as hard. So definitely got to give a lot of respect to that coach. Just one thing that I know that KJ and I were talking about just before we filmed this episode. Like we know your hard work because you know we've just done a lot of research and there's a lot of you know, different people online talking about it. And I want you to explain to the viewers a little bit more about this work that you're known for, right? So for one example, you take 500 shots before 9 a.m. And you also practice game-like shots or shots that, you know that you're going to take in your offense. So if you could just explain to the viewers what goes into Elisa's workouts, they'd definitely be interested to hear.
Yeah. So like going the end of high school, like, I'm going to be completely honest. I never was looking to get in extra shots. Like I was getting to practice maybe like 5 minutes before practice started, like not taking serious at all. And then it wasn't until I got to Milliken that it kind of was like, okay, you got to turn it into high gear. Like if you want the things that you want and you're getting this opportunity, like you have to find another gear. And that was kind of just self-motivated. But also a thing that I tell everybody and something that just sticks with me and just, I mean, I think made me the player who I am. It's just, I was overlooked in high school. And I love the game of basketball. And it's something that I always wanted to play. But hearing people just tell me, bog me down and you can't play. You're not big enough. You're not talented enough. You're not quick enough. Like that was something that kind of just had stuck with me. And I told my parents, like, I don't want to play softball anymore. In college, I don't want to play basketball. It's the sport that I love. It's a sport that I'm playing all the time by myself in the driveway. So that kind of just gave me that chip on my shoulder. Like any workout I'm doing is like, okay, I know maybe somebody else is not doing it as hard as I'm doing it. So that puts me a step above them. And it's the same thing in a game. Like if I see you're guarding me and you're tired, like I'm just going to blow by you because that's what I've worked for. And I know for a fact that you don't work as hard as me. So I think the biggest thing is just like, I was just doubted. I may still be being doubted. And, you know, I know that like my goal is to just be the best that I can be for teammates, for coaches. And I was lucky enough to do that at Milliken, and, you know, lucky enough to have the opportunity to do that here at Illinois State. But I think the biggest thing is just, chip on my shoulder. And that's been the case, you know, since I graduated high school and through Milliken. And I think coach understood that and kind of fed into it, which was also nice. And I was able to kind of voice that to my teammates, so they also understood.
I kind of want to circle back on a topic that you brought up. You talked about how the CCIW is a great conference, and truthfully, mm-hmm. it's one of the best women's basketball conferences in the country. And I just want to talk about, collectively, it's a good conference, but I want to focus on three teams: Illinois mm-hmm. Wesleyan, Carroll, and obviously you guys, Milliken. You guys all were 23-win teams, ranked top 25 for a majority of the year, all made the NCAA mm-hmm. tournament. And the CCIW was kind of interesting in that Illinois Wesleyan swept Carroll. Carroll swept you guys, but you guys swept Illinois Wesleyan. So it's just like anytime you're playing one of those teams, you can win or you can lose. So just talk about the competition in the CCIW and what that feeling was like every game, especially in those games, you got to like lock in that much more.
For sure. When you said the sweeping thing, like immediately when you started talking about CCIW and then you said three teams, they made a graphic during the CCIW tournament. And it was like each of our logos, and it was like the broom at each one. And they called it the triangle of death. I was like, yes, this is very true. And now I'm upset because I'm watching the CCIW tournament at home when I should be playing in it still. But like you said, even this past year was like, I think, a true testimony to how kind of strong the conference is and how strong it is getting. And I think, like, you know, Milliken just hired a new coach, the associate head coach from Whitewater. The WIAC is such a strong conference as well. Like, and for her to come down here and play in the CCIW, she also understands that this is a high caliber conference. It's kind of weird because when you're a senior, you face those same teams and you face them twice. So you get kind of used to those same players, but any given day, somebody's going to give you a run for your money. And that was the case a lot of the times when we went up to North Central. Even you just said those three teams, but I mean, like Elmhurst was very competitive this year. North Central is always competitive, especially on their home court. Carroll's coached very well. So is Illinois Wesleyan. Illinois Wesleyan's our rival. Great team, great athletes. I was just so fortunate enough to play against them, you know, two to three times almost every year, either get my butt kicked or win. Just very high caliber athletes. And I think a lot of the times they don't get enough credit. I was lucky enough to play at the All-Star game in March and just be around these athletes. And like, I spoke with a lot of them, Aaliyah Grundahl from UW Whitewater. And, they have nothing but great things to say about our conference. We have nothing but great things to say about their conference. And there's just like this mutual respect for such, you know, great athletes at such an important level. Like, I just love Division III and the athletes that they produce and create and allowed to compete. I was grateful enough to play in such a great conference. You know, when you have three teams that go to the NCAA tournament, like you said, and we're waiting to see if we get in at large because we have two in the same region. And it's just, you know, we're putting the CCIW on the map in the country, which is awesome.
Yeah. I definitely respect you talking highly, but I just want the viewers to know you were a three-time CCIW player of the year. So that's big time by you. This is going to be the last segment before we head to break, but you won the Jostens Trophy after your junior year. The Jostens Trophy, basically, it awards the most outstanding Division III basketball player on the men's and women's side for their athletic, academic, and community service. And this is a very prestigious award. And I heard you talking on Bob Coleman's podcast about how, like, when you won that, when you found out you won that award, you just like burst out in tears. And mm-hmm. it's because of like what you've been told and what you've been through as an athlete. So just talk to me about the emotions winning the Jostens Trophy and where those emotions kind of stem from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The first thing that I remember when I talk about this process was we just lost a hope, got home and maybe spent like a week off and then went into coach's office and she put on her TV, you know, kind of the awards and people who had won it previous. And she said, this is something that we need to strive for. And I looked at her and I said, there's no way I can win that award. Like I literally told her, I was like, it's something that I'm up for, but I just think it's so far out of reach. And that was obviously following my sophomore year. And that was one of our first full years. And then Kennedy Schoenfeld had won it that year, tremendous player, lucky enough to play against her. But going through that process of kind of focusing on how well I was going to have to perform on the floor, how well I was going to have to perform in the classroom. And those are two kind of non-negotiables for me just in general. And then that's when like the community service aspect really was appealing to me. So what I was going to strive to make sure that I was in and out of Decatur, making sure I was doing things, you know, in Champaign County from where I'm from, and kind of having my teammates involved in that. Like, I think like the biggest thing that came with this award and when I got told that I had won it was that I didn't really think about myself. I did to a point, but like, I just was so focused on my team and they are deserving of any award that I get. And they kind of just came to my mind first, as well as coach and just faculty there. But yeah, like you said, in Bob's podcast, and when I explained to him, I got the call when I was in Florida and just broke down. I just thanked our SID. And then I ended up calling my mom right after. And I was like, you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you. And then she also cried because she's emotional and just like, but it just, the thing that was huge for me was that it covered everything that is super important to me. And that's, you know, athletics, academics, and then community service. Like I love serving those around me, especially when I, you know, I don't have a basketball uniform on, when I'm just being me. And I think that was just something that like that award was so prestigious to me. Yeah, maybe 60 pounds and a glass ball, but it covers just about everything that's important to me. And I was able to spend that day with my teammates, take some pictures and be honored. And yeah.
That's a very good story. Very heartwarming. But we're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. We're going to come back, talk about your transition to Illinois State and your mindset going in.
And we're back. So, you know, now you're at Illinois State and you've been there, like you said at the beginning of the episode, you've been there for 2 weeks now. But just a little bit about Illinois State. The head coach is Kristen Gillespie. She was a point guard for NC State when they made it, if I'm not mistaken, to the Final Four in 1998. Mm-hmm. She was a starting point guard on that squad, and she was a 4-year letter winner and a 3-year captain. So highly decorated playing career, but also she's brought in a lot of high profile guards in her program, like Paige Robinson, Juju Redmond, Mary Crompton, and Maya Wong. Mm-hmm. So first, just talk about what it's like getting recruited by and having the opportunity to be coached by her.
Definitely grateful just to be in her presence and then obviously have her be my leader. And that was something in the recruiting process. They came in the picture a little bit late. But I think, especially after my visit, it was like the place that I wanted to be and where I needed to be, I think, in this last year. And luckily, like you said, you mentioned all those guards' names. I'm lucky enough to get to play with Maya for her last year. And then obviously I played against Paige in high school, and actually spoke with her kind of about her recruiting process, and her decision to, you know, make it ISU after she spent, 4 years at Drury at the Division II level. So she was kind of in the same boat, obviously played at a higher level, but, I think that kind of gave me confidence, you know, if Coach Gillespie can do that for an athlete that is similar to my situation, then that's exactly where I want to be. And they have some D3 ties too. The associate head coach, Scott, he played at Division III level for his dad, I believe all 4 of his years. So they kind of understand that Division III tie, which is something that was also really important to me. because not a lot of people understand it. And if you played basketball at that level, then you kind of get the athletes that they produce. So I think that was also a huge selling point for me when I decided to come and play for her and their staff.
How do you think like your own experience at the Division III level? You talked about Division III ties that you have at Illinois State now, but how do you think your own experience at the D3 level is going to help you in your transition to the Division I level?
Mm-hmm. I think just being, I mean, I told this to Coach when I decided to, you know, come here, Coach Lett, just being grateful for the opportunity to play and play at a high level with such high caliber athletes. You know, I think you know, I'm having to wash at Millikan, I'm having to wash our uniforms. Sometimes we get home or like on the weekends, and those are things that you don't necessarily do at this level. But I think like, yeah, it's just ultimately being grateful about everything and the opportunity to play. And my parents have kind of been super like on me about that, especially in this transition. It's just, you know, just because you're playing at a higher level doesn't mean things are given to you. You still have to earn everything. Like I've said previously about other aspects regarding this podcast, but yeah, I think that's just been like at the forefront of my mind, especially in these first 2 weeks. And especially when I decided to come here, you know, a month ago now, maybe when I made my decision.
I mentioned this in a previous episode, but like the Division III struggles, it really builds a ton of character so that when people make that jump, it makes it like that much more beneficial, or like those resources mean that much more to them. So I appreciate that you bringing that up. Like sometimes you got to do your own laundry, or sometimes you got to go follow your own shot for a rebound. But I want to transition into a different topic. I heard in the same podcast with Bob Coleman that your workouts, and Ruta mentioned this, you're trying to practice game-like shots or how the defense is going to be guarding you. Your coach is telling you, like, don't practice this because this is what a team's going to do to you. You played a lot of box and ones or triangle and twos in your career. So just talk about how this offseason has been different regarding your workouts because you are going into something unfamiliar, the Division I game.
Right. And like you said, like, it's always been super important to me to kind of get in, do my workout in 45 minutes and be done. Like, I don't want to spend 2 hours doing things that I'm not going to do in a game. And, I think that's something that kind of scared me when I decided to come here, is that I was so familiar with Coach Lett and, Millikan and exactly what I was doing there, that I was now going to have all these amplified resources and that they were just going to completely change my game. And that's something that like, I don't want. Like, there are a lot of things about my game that I really like and that I've tried to kind of perfect in these past 4 years. But I mean, I had conversations with Scott, who is, you know, he does a lot of guard work, and he's like, we can change some things, but at the end of the day, like, you're the player that you are, and we're not going to change everything because we recruited you here because you provide something that's different. And you know, they're on me about a lot of little things because Coach wasn't able to kind of watch that in practice. She was taking care of, you know, 20 other kids in the gym. So that's kind of been like a big difference with kind of like individual workouts and what that looks like. But, I think like if there's anything that I could tell like anybody now, I think in my experience of kind of just working out on my own, is that it's so important to practice things that you know for a fact that you're doing in a game, and trying to perfect those to the best of your ability. Like, I think you see so many kids these days that like, I mean, Caitlin Clark, what she's done for the game, Steph Curry, what he's done for the NBA. Like, you just see, like, I go to my brother's games and there's just kids chucking 3-pointers from like 5 feet behind the arc. And it's like, come on, like, you can't be doing that. Like, this is not realistic. You just got in the game and here you are chucking up a 3-pointer or doing some absurd, like, I don't know, like jelly lay, like, come on, it's not even getting close to the rim. It's just like those kind of things. And I think it's just important. And, you know, maybe that comes from coaches, parents, teammates, like, make sure that you're doing the things that you know for a fact that you're going to do in a game. And I think that's something that's really important to me when it comes to working out on my own. But yeah.
You're definitely preaching right now. I hope that parents especially are listening, like, tell your kids what they should be practicing, or your game is not this. You should be practicing on the simpler things or things of that nature. So I appreciate that. But I read in an article that, like, you said, I want the ball in my hands to end quarters, to end halves, to end the game. And nothing against Division III talent, but obviously you're moving on into a higher division, Division I, with, end quotes, better teammates, end quote. So does that mindset switch at all? You know, like, now I might be the third option, or I might be the fifth option on the court right now. So does your mindset change in that you want the ball at all times, or to in the biggest moments?
Yeah. So that quote that you mentioned from me is actually really funny, because, like, there are so many times at the end of a quarter where I didn't necessarily want the ball in my hands, and coach would look at me and she'd be like, we're going to set a top of the key ball screen for you. And I was like shaking my head, no, like, let's have my teammate Didi, like, she would get the ball screen. And, like, I'm sorry. Like, yeah, maybe I have this high scoring average, but I know that I can't finish this quarter out for you just because, like, I don't want to let you down. But I mean, obviously there were a lot of times where my teammates wanted the ball in my hands. But no, definitely in terms of what you're saying, to this jump to this level, like, these were the conversations that I had with their coaching staff, was just that I'm going to be surrounded by a lot different caliber players. And that kind of takes the weight off of my shoulders, as it was in, you know, my 4 years at Millikan. I was having to kind of do, maybe, I don't want to say a lot more things than my teammates, because that's not the case. Like, each one of my teammates at Millikan brought something different to the table that, you know, I couldn't do. But I was maybe carrying a little bit of a heavier load in some games, or, but I think something that I'm going to be grateful for now is that there won't be a box and one on me on this level. Other teams just can't afford to do that with my teammates now. And that's something that I've seen, you know, through high school and through, unfortunately, Millikan, which I thought wasn't going to be the case. But yeah, definitely switching my mindset to the fact that, like, at the end of the day, like, I just want to win games, and whatever I need to do that. If that's give, you know, my teammates the ball at the end of the quarter, that's what it is. Or, you know, get a stop on defense. Like, that's exact. If it results in a win, then that's what I'm willing to do.
I think this is such an interesting conversation, because, like, you, like, at any time, you know, we're watching any of your, like, interviews with other people, right? Like, anytime you're on the precipice of a major accomplishment or award, like, it seems like you're staying, like, grounded, right? Like, you're never too high, you're never too low. And you said grateful a lot in this episode, and you were talking about how you couldn't have done it without your teammates or your coaching staff, or, like, your parents, like, telling you, you know, to stay locked in. So I'm just kind of interested, before I ask this last question, like, where did you, like, develop this mindset? Like, how long have you had this mindset? Because not a lot of people can, like, stay grounded through, like, getting awards or major accomplishments. So just talk a little bit about that.
Right. I think, like I said in the previous question, is just being the underdog. Like I can just count many, many times that, like, if this goes for, like, any athletes who are struggling with this now, or even, like, they did it at a younger age. Like, I was on travel softball teams with people that I knew were so much better than me, was sitting on the bench. But at the end of the day, I was watching, you know, these athletes compete at such a high level, and not a lot of people get this opportunity. And lucky enough, like, my parents have been just so on me about, like, if you want what you want, you have to work for it. And I think that's maybe not the case with a lot of other people in their situation. But I think, like, yeah, I think my family is plays a big aspect in it. My grandpa's not, he doesn't take it light on me either at all, even as he gets older in age, still yells at me. But I think, you know, it's the mentality that I've had, and it's helped me achieve a lot of different things. And it's something that, you know, it's just who I am. It's something that I won't change. I'll give the credit where it's due, and I won't ever take the credit for somebody else when I know that they're working harder than me, or helped us win a game. Like, that's just, I mean, that's just who I am. But yeah, I think a lot of it stems from my family, and I'm lucky to kind of be able to kind of push that mentality onto my teammates, my peers, anybody that I cross paths with, basically.
This is kind of something I was just thinking about on the fly, but obviously you're a great basketball player. I was kind of wondering, what's your, I know that you take your classroom study serious too, you're a finance major. So after, not looking too far ahead, but after this year, are you thinking like I might be a overseas professional basketball player? Or are you gonna call it after this season?
Right. This is something that I've thought about. Slept in Spain for I think 6 months. She really wants me to play. I'm kind of right now, I'm in the mindset of no, and I just want to kind of get on with the rest of my life and maybe take a step away from sports for a little bit. I love basketball, but I'm not sure I love it enough to go play overseas and kind of wear and tear on my body. But I mean, maybe that could change. I don't know. Right now, I know my parents and my family members would kind of be not super excited the fact that they can watch me play in person if I was playing overseas. My grandpa might move to wherever I am. That might be the case. Yeah, I think my main focus right now, if I were to stay in basketball, would be coaching. I'm not sure at what level, but just kind of want to give back to the sport, especially like the younger age, like the transitional age of like maybe junior high to high school. Like that just really intrigues me. And if I have the opportunity to have a GA position somewhere, that's something that I would be more than willing to take, to kind of just have that on my resume and dabble kind of in the coaching world.
So, you know, to kind of wrap it up, Coach Lepp mentioned in an interview that you, during your time at Millikan, and even now when you're still playing basketball at Illinois State, you want to build something past yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And as women's basketball continues to grow, what would you tell a young girl on how to stay grounded through negative perceptions or stereotypes in women's basketball?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question now at the time that we're at in women's basketball. I feel like I get on social media and it's something new every day, some new narrative. And it's unfortunate that a lot of the time that's with Caitlin Clark, and, you know, there are a lot of young girls that follow her and what she's done for the game. So, I mean, it's a really difficult question right now in this kind of like realm. But I think like the biggest thing at this point is focusing so much on you. I think a lot of the times people use the term like it's always me versus me, which is, that's so real. Like, I mean, I don't know if a younger girl would understand that, but at the end of the day, like it's you against yourself, and what you want, you have to go get. And I mean, I think like social media, there are a lot of times where these young girls just get so caught up in watching like different things that may not necessarily pertain to them. So I think a big thing also is just like not getting caught up in that social media narrative, like what all these people are posting. Like I feel like on Facebook and it's like some guy who's never touched a basketball in his life is saying something about an athlete who plays like the highest level. And it's like, there are people who literally read this and like believe it, or, you know, but yeah, I think it's at the end of the day, it's you versus you. And again, also surrounding yourself, like I said before, surrounding yourself with people who, you know, you want to be around, who have kind of like the same mindset as you. I think that's huge at a young age. And I think a lot of the times when I was growing up, especially, was I saw like kids getting pressured into playing, you know, so many games, or playing AAU, or playing every sport they imagine so they can have all these coaches see them play. You know, if you love the game, you love the game, and that's on you. Don't let anybody kind of pressure you into doing things that you don't want to do as an athlete. I think that's also super important, especially that's what I saw growing up. And you see people kind of fall out of love with the game or whatever sport they may aspire to play. So,
yeah, that was definitely an interesting question, but an even more of a gem of an answer. So I appreciate what the advice, and definitely like there's so much ignorance in the world. It's easy to go in that path of just like, oh, this is how women's basketball is. They don't make layups, or they're not good at basketball. But just staying true, like if you love the game, just focus on yourself and be the best player. So one day maybe you could be like Elise.
Yes, maybe so.
But we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. So let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
I think I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. All right, so I wasn't able to find your schedule for next year, but question that I wanted to ask, what is your most anticipated away game next year?
Drake.
That's okay, tough.
I like that.
Yeah.
Second rapid fire question. It's more of like a yes or no question, but I know that Chicago is known for like deep dish pizza, okay, if I'm not mistaken. And you are from Illinois, but I know you're not from Chicago. But are you a fan of deep dish pizza? Can you kind of put your opinion in this discussion?
I think deep dish is overrated. I really like thin pizza. I like my pizza crispy. I used to like deep dish. I don't anymore.
Okay, thank you. All right. I never saw the interest in it. I just had to ask that. Yeah. And then last rapid fire question: Who is the funniest teammate? You could name more than one if you want, but funniest teammate that you had at Millikan.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, I do. Okay, the three people that I lived with last year, like, I feel like they just combined into one because they're like, their humor is the exact same. So it was Sophie Darden, Gabby Thomason, Jacqueline Anderson, and then Jordan Hildebrand was somebody that I played through 2 years with. She's like my bestest friend. We just get each other like on a different level, humor wise, everything else. So those would probably be like the top.
All right, so we're going to finish with starting five edition. If you were a coach assembling a starting five, point guard through center, who would your lineup be? And this edition is going to be players you've played with or against in your whole career. It could be from high school all the way to even your teammates now at Illinois State.
Right. It was an interesting question because you said played with or played against. So I did all Division III athletes because I started with Aaliyah Grundle at the five. She's from Whitewater. She just finished her grad year last year. She was on the All-American team with me maybe like 3 years in a row. Kennedy Schoenfeld, she won the Jostens Award for me, played at Hope, knockdown three-point shooter. I want her on the wing.
Positions too. All right, yeah.
She would probably be the three. Kennedy Schoenfeld would be the three. And then Miranda Fox, she was my point guard, freshman, sophomore, junior year, just a dog. Like, I know for a fact that she would lead our team. She'd be our point guard. And then Jess Brooks from Wash U, just a down-to-earth person. She would be our four. Great leader, too, and can shoot the three as a trail post. Like, that's exactly what I want. And then Casey Carollo, she's also from UW-Whitewater. She would be either the two or the one. She could switch. But I know her and Aaliyah play on a little bit of a string together. I played against them, and they're tough to guard and play against. So that would be my starting five.
That's a good lineup. And you mentioned earlier how you might want to get into coaching after. Based off that, how you designed your team, I think you'd be a pretty good coach.
Thank you.
But that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate your time joining us, and it's been a wonderful episode. So appreciate you, and good luck with everything moving forward.
Thank you very much, you guys.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.